Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. By the way, let me remind you that tomorrow I will be broadcasting live from Orlando, from Bay Hill, the Bay Hill Country Club in Orlando. That's right. That's Arnold Palmer's property down there. And I probably mentioned this once, maybe way back, but I'm on the National Advisory Council for the Arnold Palmer Hospitals in Orlando, and I'm going down for a meeting there tomorrow. That's what I'm doing down there. And I'm only saying that because I like to, whenever I get a chance, not gratuitously, I like to tell people about that. And so tomorrow, a lot of our programming tomorrow will be around small business owners in Orlando, in the Orlando area. But we'll also be talking about some of the medical technology, some of the medical research that has been developed by the Arnold Palmer Hospital complex down there in Orlando, and some of the cool things they're doing. And with any luck, as we did the last time I was down there, we're going to have the king on the show, Mr. Palmer himself. We're working on that. Looks like that's going to happen. And he was with me the last time I was down there. It was a wonderful visit. Red letter day in this broadcaster's life, I'll tell you that. And so anyway, we're looking forward to that. So hopefully we got that to look forward to tomorrow. It's going to be a good show, and I'm looking forward to broadcasting from Orlando. But right now, I'm still in my regular environs, and we're getting ready to interview our good friend, talk to our good friend Jim Ostroff, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Jim, and good morning, everybody.
It's good to have you here. Jim, I've been saying this for several weeks now. I predicted in the earlier part of the year that 2008 would be the year that we would live the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Exactly, and we are.
On so many levels, right? Financial, economic, political, geopolitical, all the Olympic. We got the Olympics this year. I mean, right. there are so many points of interest that are going to happen this year. It's got to be a journalist's dream come true, Jim.
Well, you know, it really is, or the other cliche, kid in the candy store, because there is so much going on, so much of real great interest and import, not only now, but for the future, and we know that. Leaders do make a difference. Policy does make a difference, again, for better or worse. So on just about every level, you know, this happens, but as we all have seen here, every now and then there are years in which everything seems to happen.
It's like the perfect storm, isn't it?
It is, and just the fates bring it together, or it just by chance, but everything comes together, and it really means, or oftentimes means, that we are heading in new directions, again, for
Jim,
better or worse.
Let's look at what's happened in the last few days. The economy over the last several months,
right.
I'm going to back up. I'm going to say the economy. I didn't mean to say that, folks. Scratch that.
Yeah.
The stock markets, which I remind people that Wall Street is not the same thing as Main Street. The stock markets globally have been having their difficulties, major difficulties, especially the financial sectors. And so over the first part of the week, the foreign markets really did more than take a tumble. They panicked.
They did.
And it looked like it was going to be contagious for us.
Right.
But as it turns out, what's happened is, our Federal Reserve Board took some steps. Our things have recovered on our side, and all across the world now, basically, things have gotten back on to a fairly even keel, although not back to where everybody wants. My point in saying all that, Jim, is, look at how quickly information and the global connectivity of all of us, look at how quickly all of that, number one, created a problem, but then number two, solved the problem. Jim, this is good news, isn't it?
Well, you know, again, it's positive and negative. Again, it over here, there's bad news, and you can figure within a second it will be around the world. But on the other hand, knowing that, policymakers can do some things, at least in the immediate term, that will reassure those who have gone weak in the knees. They have, and they have for now. And there'll be some additional follow-up action. Of course, we're writing this week in the Kiplinger letter. Looks like Congress is going to enact some very significant economic stimulus legislation. The Fed will cut a bit more, likely.
Right, next week.
It could be up to another additional 0.5% or 50 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say, one other thing. Again, governments on various levels and regulators here and elsewhere perhaps taking some steps to ultimately give some more assurance to people who invest that, we can't go back and fix what happened in the past, that steps being taken to try to at least fix to an extent what is ailing us now in terms of, say, perhaps a bottomless pit, as some perceive
right.
it, over here. So take steps here. All that will help. I got to say, we've learned a great deal from a period 60 and 70 years ago or 100 years ago where there's a panic
right.
and people said,
Jim, even in our lifetime in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And
early 80s.
Early 70s, right.
Yeah.
Right.
In those days, folks, if you went into a recession, it wasn't just a little two-quarter blip.
No.
You might be in a recession for a year and a half.
That's right. And of course, we had a recession essentially in it was basically in 79 and then pretty much in 80.
We had two in 81 and 82, two different ones.
Right.
And then we had the little one in 91, and then had our two, and then we had a littler one, as my grandchildren would say, in 2000, 2001.
Right. In 2001.
And
right.
now, I don't know what we're in, but the thing is, Jim, is that, we've got two different groups of people who are trying to keep us on an even keel right now.
Mm-hmm.
From the monetary side, we got the Fed.
Right.
From a fiscal side, we got the government.
Right.
And the people I'm worried the most about are the government right now.
Well, they're here to help.
Because it's my scrooginess coming out. Maybe it's my libertarian slip showing. I don't know what, but I really have a problem with some of the stuff that the government is working on trying to do. Because number one, I think it's going to create a problem, and number two, it's not going to happen quick enough. Hold on to that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get Jim Ostroff to comment on my comment right after these messages. We got a lot of good stuff, folks. A lot more stuff coming at you right off the Kiplinger letter, right after these messages, 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with me.
What do you do?
The Atlanta Rhythm Section, ladies and gentlemen, Doraville, one of the great songs that they recorded. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you can find all the things that we do, the show, the archives, the articles, the Brain Trust members, the newsletter, the blog, all that stuff is there for you for free. Just exactly what you need to help you with your small business. Just look around there and find stuff that you've got on your mind, and there's probably going to be some kind of information there that will help you with that. And, of course, don't forget to check out our knowledge base, askjim.biz, where you can get small business answers now. We're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what the government wants to do, or is not maybe not wants to do, what they're talking about doing, jawboning about doing, politicking, ideologuing about doing, to solve, in their words, to help solve the economic challenges we've got. Jim, I'm really troubled by this. It's just so unseemly to me for the government just to say, oh, why don't we just send everybody a check, or why don't we do this or that? And now, if they want to give small business owners some tax breaks, I'm all for that. What do you think?
The thing here is two, one. Perhaps there is the psychological effect, particularly on people who are consumers, and consumers have kept our economy humming even in very tough times. So they say consumers know they're getting this check. That has sort of an outsized effect on their outlook and spending. But beyond that, it's politics.
But Jim, that's the psychological part that that actually bothers me.
Yeah,
bothers me that we're raising a nation of generations that whenever things get tough, they look to the government to send them a check. I mean, I thought we'd gotten beyond that, Jim. I thought that was 20th century statism. Why are we talking about these things? Why are we doing this kind of thing? The 21st century is a century of the entrepreneur. You take responsibility for your own actions. If you make a mistake, you suck it up and get over it, and you deal with it. I mean, that's the century of the entrepreneur. And this bailout, I'm sorry, I'm on my soapbox. Bailout thing is just, that's more statism to me.
We did that, and of course we did that just really in 2001 with an average check of about 400. But I think really there is really a different driver here, and it ultimately has to do with the political system in this country as it is now and has been perhaps since the late 90s. Over here, you have both parties that continue to fight and say we're on the right, with a small r. They are just falling over each other to show, you know, that they are in the right and that they have the little guy in mind, and they're going to give money away. So it's like you might say, the economics be damned, over here,
right.
And they're just going to give the money away. That's it. And as I should say here, there are differences, slight differences in approach right now between the GOP and the Democrats, but they're important differences. But bottom line is, both parties want to get something out the door as quickly as possible, so they can go on record and say, we were in the right. So nobody can go back in the election, whether it be on a national, state, or local level, and say, you opposed aid to the poor. So that's why they're all going to say it's for the record, whether it's right or wrong.
I'll tell you something else, Jim, that you're going to be able to see over the next 2 months. You're going to be able, folks, if you'll pay attention, if you're a small business owner and you pay attention to the next 2 months, over who wants what and who prevents what from happening, you're going to be able to see who the politicians are that are people who care, who truly care about your small business, and who aren't.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are going to be Democrats, some of them are going to be Republicans. But I'm telling you, if you'll pay attention when you hear them talking about these things, and I know your eyes want to glaze over, you just want to turn the channel when they start talking about this, because I do too. But I'm telling you, Jim, when they start talking about their solutions, the way to drive this economy is to get the businesses the incentive to invest and to grow, not to give the consumer more money. I mean, if you give businesses the ability to invest and grow, they will create jobs, which will create opportunity, which will create income that people can go and spend. This is giving people money back, Jim. Is like feeding with fish, is teaching them to fish.
Well, I know, and you can feed people fish or you can teach them how to fish. Of course, that's somewhat simplistic, but the basic point is true and accurate, and has been so forever and will be.
Jim, that you guys reported this week is they may talk about hiking food stamps or extending jobless claims,
expanding
the child tax credit, lots of stuff like that.
There's also talk about increasing depreciation for businesses and doing some of those things, which
I'm in favor of, especially if we make them permanent, Jim.
And the point is, are they just part of a quick Band-Aid fix, or are they more important and basic? And if they work as a major stimulus here during what's perceived as tough times, wouldn't they help day in and day out in better times?
Exactly. We'll wrap this up real quick, folks, on the other side, and move on to some other things which we had to report right after these messages. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Jim Ostroff is our guest. He and I will be right back.
Turn around and see you in a crowded place. Watch for the emotions on the guard.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for staying with me. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. Jim Ostroff is our guest and our good friend, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim, the just to wrap up on this thing that the government's working on with regard to what they're calling the stimulus package, there's no way to know what's going to happen. It's going to be a mess. It's going to be a big. I mean, it's just going to be. I'm going to say there's 1 in 10 chance it'll actually be something appropriate. What do you think?
Well, the odds may be somewhere of that magnitude. And the thing is, because, of course, I mean, they're moving so quickly, and basically the thought is here, if there's something wrong, we'll come back and fix it some other time.
Jim, think about this now. I want to juxtapose a couple of numbers here with each other. The AMT brings in about $60 billion a year. All right?
Okay.
They can't abolish it because they can't figure out how to lose $60 billion a year.
All right.
Right?
Yeah.
The people are talking about this bailout fix, this thing that they're working on, being anywhere from $150 to $300 billion.
That's right.
They can't fix the AMT, alternative minimum tax, at $60 billion a year, where are they going to get the money to give us $300 billion?
But that doesn't count because that we'll really have to figure that out after the election, and then they'll bring it up.
But you see my point, and see, this is what I'm trying to get at, folks, is they have no problem taking our money from us. They can't find ways to stop taking our money from us.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't wait to give us money back in the form of this kind of help, so we become beholden to them. And Jim, that's the part that upsets me about the way things are moving in the 21st century.
So we need more money, you know. And basically, the point is, you know, it's the government's rightful role to take care of us, to do everything.
That's the attitude.
To hopefully eliminate all risk.
Yeah.
Eliminate all risk.
Jim, let's move over and talk about something. We talked about the Fed earlier. The Fed took on Tuesday, cut 0.75 point early Tuesday morning,
right,
in response to try to ward off any kind of further panic throughout the stock markets.
Even though
it was an example of the Fed denying the facts in front of them, the inflation facts in front of them, the dollar weakening facts in front of them, and all that, denying all that, it does seem like it was a step that the Fed took to save the stock market.
I would say you may save the stock market, or save, but in the U.S. as well as particularly abroad, and I must say the feeling, as I understand, under the Fed was that if swift action and strong action were not taken very soon, that particularly overseas, bottom would fall out of many stock markets.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is, of course, we're in a global market that absolutely would make things a lot worse.
No, they did the right thing. No, mm-hmm. No, I'm just. The point is, they did what they had to do.
Right,
now,
right.
One thing, many people, Jim, as you know, many people thought that they should have done that 2 weeks ago.
That's right.
Or a month ago.
They were holding off, said, let's see, again, because of concern about igniting inflation down the road. So they held off. But events overtook them. And a matter of fact, I mean, you know, we had looked at this very closely, and even last week in the letter that was published last week, we felt the Fed would act on January 30th and cut maybe a half a
right,
point.
Right.
And that absolutely was right and accurate, but things changed so rapidly.
Well, nobody, I mean, even the smartest people on the planet didn't predict what was going to happen in Asia over the weekend.
That's right. And
I mean, it took everybody by surprise. You know, Jim, one of the things to think about with the Fed, and to give the Fed a little bit of a break, if they had cut a half or 3/4 earlier in the month, we still might have had the panic in Asia. and the Fed wouldn't have had any headroom to do what they did.
That's a very good point. And there's concern, of course. Like I say, now we're down to, I think, a rate of about, I think it's 3.5 or
3.5 on the Fed funds rate, yeah.
Right. And there's only so, how low can you go? And at some point, that's a big concern. It's like saying maybe we're close to running out of ammunition. So all things considered, it may well have been good that they did not cut earlier.
Yeah, probably so. Hang on to that thought, Jim. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 20 till the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff. When we come back, I want to talk about something called decoupling, which I think is a very interesting concept that we've talked about here on the show quite a bit over the years. We just didn't call it that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Ostroff, and he's with the Kiplinger Editors. And folks, I always like telling you about their website, which is kiplinger.com. I've been using it for a long time. Of course, I've been a subscriber to their publications and have been reading. It's a great company. And Jim, talk to us about the publications.
One thing is, our flagship is the Kiplinger Letter, which has been around since 1923, and we look at the forecast for management decision making, and we basically look at trends and forecast trends that will affect businesses and consumers throughout the economy. And then, of course, there is the Tax Letter, our California Letter, an Ag Letter. And we even have a new biofuels market alert letter to focus on that market.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah. It's
that's a brand new one, huh?
New one started about 8 months ago, but it brings the same Kiplinger format over here, looking at some very hot sector and just giving people, some real unbiased information and advice. Again, there's a lot of hype within that sector, and people are jumping in with very little knowledge to make a million, if not a billion. And
right.
We just sort of say, here's what it is. Here are the upsides, here are the downsides, here's what to watch, here's where to invest.
Well, absolutely. And folks, that's Kiplinger.com. And the phone number, Jim, give us that.
Yeah,
again,
we have a toll-free number. It's 800-544-0155.
All right. Jim, let's move over and talk about something that I think is interesting. For a long time, we thought that if the U.S. economy ever slowed, in fact, I commented back in the fall, I said, as our U.S. economy slows a little bit, hopefully the rest of the world is going to pick up and it can kind of sustain us a little bit. But I think we found out that there isn't a decoupling of the U.S. economy from the rest of the world. People have been using that word, decoupling.
Right.
Decoupling,
right.
We now know decoupling is a myth, because when the U.S. economy starts slowing down, everybody else is panicking almost, aren't they?
Well, they do, and certainly, one other very large economy in Japan. It's interesting to see its economy, its economic growth, slow almost in line exactly, almost, with the U.S. And I got to say, certainly, people say, growth in China and India will offset any decline in the U.S. But they are very worried there because, of course, the U.S. is an enormous purchaser of things. And the point is, if the U.S. went into recession, businesses in China, India, and elsewhere would suffer as well.
Jim, the U.S. economy is one-third, almost one-third of the global economy.
It is.
And the only other economy that approaches us now is Japan, and they're about to go into a recession.
Or
some people
very
think.
Very close.
And they're less than half of us.
That's right.
And folks, you might think China is big. You might think China is going to overtake us. China is only about one-fifth of our economy.
That's right, growing fast, but it is at 20% the size.
So here's the naked truth about this. The sad truth is the U.S. economy, does drive the world economy. A lot of people are trying to make it look like, Jim, that you and I are not relevant anymore. But I'm telling you right now, it's been proven in the last week, literally this week, right. Decoupling is a myth. This week, the relevance, the U.S. economy being irrelevant to the rest of the world is a myth. The rest of the world needs our economy. And I'll tell you something else, Jim. It's the Fed kind of went into a little bit of a dormant stage with regard to its global impact, but we now know that the Federal Reserve Board of the United States is the global central bank. It's the lead global. It's always been the lead, but it really is the central bank of the world.
No question about it. And you know, really, if the U.S. would catch a cold, the rest of the world catches pneumonia.
That used to be a trite little saying that people thought was not true anymore, but it is true. Hey, Jim, let's move over and talk about superdelegates. Tell us what a superdelegate is.
Okay, yeah, these are...
We're getting over into the election stuff.
Right.
And these are people that are a big deal. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. These are people who each party gives in each state, well, basically lets the governors decide... how to award delegates. This is totally outside of the primaries. And the thing is that about 20% of each state's number of delegates to their Democratic Republican conventions are appointed by the governor, and they can essentially can vote any way they want. And you know, in a tight race, if we come out of Super Duper Tuesday next month and there is no clear winner and it's still murky going towards the convention, then these delegates, the governors, will decide
right.
who the party's nominees are.
These are governors, lawmakers, and other big party luminaries. Like, for example, if Bill Clinton decided to become a delegate.
Right.
I don't know if that's actually legal anymore, but these people really are going to have a big impact, aren't they? And in an election year like we've got right now,
right.
Where things are so tight on both sides, these endorsements could really make a big difference, couldn't they?
They could, and that's why you see the various candidates really scrambling to pick up endorsements.
Right.
For instance, Obama, worked and got the endorsement of Arizona's governor Janet Napolitano.
Right. Exactly.
It'll make a difference.
Jim, hold on that thought, folks. We're going to take a quick break. We got to wrap up things with Jim Ostroff right after these messages. Lots more good stuff. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
For the constant in the chaos, for the fulcrum in the void, following your destiny, our steps cannot avoid.
With the old man stranded again, so off I'd ran, a young world crashing around me.
Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Jim, one of the things you guys report this week on the human resources side is that the government is planning on expanding the disability law, the ADA. Tell us about that.
Yeah, American Disability Act. And right now, compliance with that only, it only applies to people who have certain conditions that limit some major life activity. Right now, there's a bill, though, that would apply that and basically, to much more broadly. It could be to people with certain and broad physical or mental ailments, and even are on various medications to treat a certain ailment. Mm-hmm. But the point here is it's saying that if someone is taking a certain medication, whatever, there are certain things you cannot do. You cannot approach them. You have as a business owner, you would have a lot more limited ability to deal with employees, for better or worse. But that's the way it is. And some would say this is one that Bush would definitely veto. But there's a concern though, because his dad actually was the president who pushed the original ADA. And, so this President Bush may be reluctant to do anything about it, although we think he's probably going to work hard to make changes in that. But related to that, there are some new rules coming out, regulations from the Bush Justice Department that are likely to require businesses to accommodate people with certain disabilities by going and changing their light switches, making them lower. making parking vans available and more customer, you know, accessible.
So having we may actually have to retrofit existing buildings.
And not only that, but people may have to retrofit buildings they retrofitted. Because they're changing again, so companies, especially small companies, have spent a lot of money making some changes, and they may have to go back and do it again because it's not low enough. Example, of course, it's not black and white, but the thing is over here that you you have government saying, well, this is the gold standard, and 5-10 years later coming back and saying, no, we've changed our minds, we're doing something else, spend more money, we're not going to pay you a penny to do it.
Yeah, these are mandates, unfunded mandates, basically.
Absolutely, and you have no choice, say so. You just have to do it. You must comply, and that's it. Yeah.
I'll tell you something. If you're building a new building, you sure better make sure you have an architect involved. That is, if it's a building that your employees and or your customers are going to use, better make sure you've got an ADA. Knowledgeable architect involved. Americans for Disabilities Act.
Absolutely.
You got to be able to do that. Otherwise, you're going to be in big trouble. Jim, let's move over and talk about some other things. Over on page 4, you got some small business stuff here. You've got some online software that's going to be good for small business. Talk to us about some of these things. As you know, Jim, small business owners, when you talk to a small business owner, you're probably talking to the IT staff.
That's right. You are. And the thing is, though, not only there are certain things you must do to comply with laws and regulations, but also you're looking for ways, of course, to do something more efficiently, most efficiently at lower cost. And, we looked at various companies that do things. So one company called PayCycle, you know, it does payroll, the entire payroll with tax withholding and tax payments. It does IRS reports, you know, and it's like less than $25 a month. If up to 5 people. I mean, there's something called Bill.com that tackles all different financial tasks, paying bills. And, you know, it goes on and on like that. I would say here, and we're not looking to sell something, but the Kiplinger letter gives a lot of good, this week, specific names of companies. But the point here is that there are these packages out there. For instance, a QuickBook that manages accounting billing online. Yeah. Again, $24.95.
Well, see, Jim, the great thing about all this is, and the message I think that small business owners need to take away from this is, we have power today at our fingertips for $29.95. That GM paid $20 million 20 years ago to have access to something that wasn't as powerful.
And they needed
and that's
a
what's
whole
making
staff.
Small business owners the strength of this economy.
It is, absolutely. It gives them the tools to, you might say, to do the things as well or better than the largest of companies and certainly better than the government.
Yep. Absolutely. So. Hey, Jim, thanks for being here. Good job today, as always. We'll see you next time.
Always appreciate it, and thank you, Jim.
Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors. He's one of the best, as you can tell. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. And remember, next time I talk to you, I'll be broadcasting live from Bay Hill in Orlando, Florida. Take it easy.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.